you will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness,
adding value, showing that you have value,
to the downside of venture capital.
You will not own the company.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO and today's guest host.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to the Tough Things First podcast. I'm your guest host, Guy Smith, and of course, the star attraction, as always, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO, Mr. Ray Zinn. Howdy, Ray.
Well, howdy to you there, Guy.
I feel we should say howdy because we both grew up on cattle ranches, and I recently saw a picture of you taken just last week, mounted on your horse up in Montana, and it looks like you have not given up your cowboy ways.
Not a chance.
I've got my Justin boots on right now, so I think we're both still holding on to that.
Are they goat ropers or what?
Nope, just riding boots. Just riding boots. So anyway, I want to talk about customers leaving. One of the worst things that can happen when you have a company of any size, but especially for startups, is when customers suddenly start to vanish. Occasionally, you have big, sudden, mass defections of customers. Occasionally, it's a slow trickle. But losing customers is always a big warning sign. So let's talk about those two different things, the slow trickle of losing customers and some big sudden changes. You know, what causes these kind of things, and what should a CEO, especially of a startup, be looking for in terms of when customers leave and why they leave?
I've always held that you don't want to have any one customer greater than 20% of your total revenue. Because that's about as much as you can handle if they leave. So if you size your organization such that you can cut back 10 or 15% without, you know, too much pain, then you can tolerate a customer of, you know, and sub 20% to, if they leave, you can handle that. So that's the first gauge I use, is that no one customer should exceed 20% of my revenue. Now, if you're a brand new startup, and you know, one or two customers is all you have, you know, they're going to represent 50-100% of your business. So if they leave, you know, that's going to be a big problem. So you know, it just obviously try to diversify as quick as you can your customer base, because you are going to lose customers. On average, you know, most companies lose 10-15% of their customers revenue wise a year, either through obsolescence or competitors coming in, or, you know, a number of reasons, company went out of business, whatever. But you're going to lose, you know, 10 to 15% of your customers a year, and you have to have the ability to pick those up somehow.
So that's a good lesson for people who are trying to launch their companies in Silicon Valley, is that you're going to start losing customers from day one, and you have to fold that into your economic forecast.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, as I recall, when you had Mike Krell, you lost one really big fish. I think you had Xerox, and they made up a healthy portion of your revenues, and then they decided that they were going to get out of the particular market that you were helping them serve, and that caused a hit. Tell us that story in brief and how that helped you form your 20% philosophy.
Well, at the time, they were building a color printer. And this is back in the mid-80s, and early, late 80s, I guess. It was a new market for them, you know. They were known for their black and white, but this color thing was just getting underway. And so we developed this product for them that is kind of a custom product, actually, for this new color printer called Sunray. Everything was going along fine. We made a big investment, hired a lot of good people to work and develop this product, put a lot of energy and effort into it. Sales-wise, it represented about 25% of our business, one-fourth of the total company sales. And so I remember getting a phone call from my contact at Xerox, and he said that the CEO decided to pull the plug on the program, and he was really apologetic and felt really bad, and But I sunk down in my chair. I could have actually, he could have knocked me over with a feather. So it was a horrible experience because then I had to go tell my people that we just lost a big customer. And it wasn't like over time. It was just instantaneous, meaning that their CEO was going to go announce on a press release, was going to announce it the following day that Xerox is pulling out of the color printing business. So as a consequence, you know, we had to do a significant layoff to cut back to be able to still run profitably. And it was a painful time for me. So I vowed at that point that I was never going to have a customer over 20%.
Yeah, it's probably good advice. I've known a lot of people who had small businesses that relied on one or two major customers. I've got a relative in the answering service business who a good 40% of his revenue came off of one customer. And boy, when that customer left, it caused a lot of consternation.
I've seen this over and over. This is not the first time I've seen this happen. I mean, I know of customers right out there, large semiconductor companies that have, you know, 30 or 40% of their revenue comes from one customer. Mm-hmm. In fact, I have one customer one friend that runs a company that 80% of his revenue comes from Apple. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that's just too risky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've known a couple of small semiconductor companies who were in the military aeronautics field. And when the Air Force is your only customer and they suddenly obsolete an entire aircraft line or something like that, your entire company can be wiped out in the process because you now have technically zero customers. Well, let's talk about the other side. Let's talk about the slow trickle. This is the one that almost scares me more, because how do you detect when you have more customers leaving than are coming in? What is the cause of that churn? And what is, you know, the most typical cause that CEOs miss, that the churn is now getting out of control?
It's called a leaky bucket phenomena. So when you start seeing your revenue drop off across the board, not just with one customer, but with all of them, that's a sure sign that either your pricing is unsatisfactory to them, your product has become obsolete, you've lost a fair number of seats on that particular product or that idea. Or could be that your competitors have come in and have carved off a piece of the business, and until they're qualified, you get some business, and it looks like you've still got the customer until all of a sudden you get a phone call saying that competitor XYZ has taken the business. So it's called the leaky bucket effect, and that's something you have to be aware of. But you can watch that. That's something that if you look at a product line and then all the customers seem to be trickling off, that's a sure sign that you have a product problem or a pricing or a competitor issue.
Okay. Well, this certainly makes a lot of sense. The tech industry, you and I have spent pretty much our entire careers in the tech industry. Is this phenomenon more amplified in high tech?
Because of the rapid pace, I would say so. I mean, the rapid pace of our industry just kind of precipitates that sort of issue. And you can, as they say, slowly go out of business when that happens. It's kind of like dying of cancer versus dying in an automobile accident. You know, you can. Both of them are bad because you're going to be dead. But one case you just bleed to death, and the other is, or you die slowly because of the cancer. So, yes, it is a phenomenon of our industry that you know it grows fast, but it also dies fast.
I almost have a feeling that the sudden death syndrome is more acute in high tech, because anyone who comes up with a disruptive new technology can completely vaporize an entire industry.
We all try to come up with disruptive technology just to preserve our brand, but certainly the nature of our industry, if you're not on the leading edge, you're going to be on the dying edge. So, mm-hmm. You got to keep your brand fresh and keep your customers in your pocket.
Well, and that leads to what I think is the second best management book after Tough Things First, one with the wonderful title, Only the Paranoid Survive. Is that true? Do entrepreneurs, especially in the tech industry, need to be functionally paranoid?
That's written by Andy Grove, and Andy, personality-wise, was a paranoid. And he ran Intel as a paranoid. So that can breed stagnation. In other words, if you are so paranoid that you are afraid to go right or left, you know, it's kind of like deer in the headlights, you're going to lose. I think Andy's bottom line belief in that is that, you know, you got to be looking around all the corners. I mean, there's got to be some skeletons hiding out there somewhere or a dog's going to come up and bite you. So that's what he meant by that. If you're always afraid of your shadow, if you're looking at every boogeyman out there, then you end up making a wrong decision. So make sure that if you are paranoid, that you're not paranoid of everything. You just that you already know where to look and not just react as you would.
Mm. So there's value in functional paranoia, but if you become scared of everything, you're going to eventually devolve into a state of immobility.
That's paranoia, isn't it?
Yeah.
You think everybody's after you, and you think you're about to be taken over or die, and you know that's not an optimist. An optimist is not a paranoid.
And optimism tends to work better than paranoia, or at least it has in my life. And that's probably the lesson for the entrepreneurs today, is that you do have to be watchful, but you also have to be optimistic, and more optimism than paranoia gives you pull and lift instead of drag. And so thank you once again, Ray. It was informative as always, and for all your listeners out there, by all means, two things. Drop by the Tough Things First website. You're going to find all of Ray's social media contact points there, and you can hook up with him directly on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn. And, of course, if you haven't already, you have to read Tough Things First. I mean, it is arguably one of the best management books to come down the pike, possibly in forever, because it teaches you not only about leadership and management, it teaches you some real basic life skills and how all of these work together.
Some of the thoughts or tidbits that we put on there twice a day might be of help to a lot of our listeners, because we post two thoughts of the day, two ideas, and something for them to ponder. So I'd recommend they go in and look at those tidbits and see if they're of help to them.
Excellent advice. So tune into Twitter and get those in real time, and we will see you next week for another edition of the Tough Things First podcast.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest-serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.